ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is ABC AFL Daily for your Monday. My name's Corbin Middlemass. Ben Cameron and Mark Murphy to join me for AFL Monday on what is a sad day in the footy universe and really in Australian life more broadly. The 2025 Australian of the Year, Neil Danaher, sadly passing away on Monday. We paid tribute to him with a couple of people that knew him incredibly well as look back on all the key events from round 11 of the AFL season. Here it is.
Jackson roves it, throws it out in front, he's caught holding the ball. Advantage play. Away goes Neil Danaher. Will he get a goal? It's a beautiful kick. Neil Danaher, welcome back.
It is such a great sight for myself and everyone living with MND and their families to see a sea of blue beanies at the MCG on King's birthday round. It can be at times a lonely disease, but seeing such strong community support sends a signal back to those fighting the disease. You're not on your own. We are side by side with you.
Taps it on, he's got it. Obama's back into attack again. Up she goes to Denver.
I chose to fight because if I didn't, how could I expect anyone else to? I chose to hope because I believe in the decency and generosity of Australians. I thought, if people truly understood the challenges we face, they'd join the fight with me. And you have. Oh, how you have.
On ABC Radio,
ABC Sport Digital,
and ABC Listen,
this is AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben.
And the death of Neil Danaher dominates AFL Monday on 774 ABC Melbourne tonight. Corbin and Ben with you in studio. The Australian of the Year from 2025, as you heard part of his acceptance speech there. He's so much more than that. Obviously a former footballer with the Essendon Football Club, former coach of the D's, lived with MND for the better part of the last 14 years. He, of course, he's also a husband, a father, a brother, a friend, and of course an inspiration to so many of you out there as well. We're keen to hear from you tonight if you'd like to pay tribute to Neil Danaher. 1-300-222-774 is the talkback number. My name's Corbin Middlemass. Ben Cameron's across the desk from me. Good evening, Ben.
Good evening, Corbin. It is a really sad day, isn't it? I mean, I was reflecting on this and I'm glad I haven't really heard many news reports say that Neil Danaher lost his battle with MND, because he didn't lose a thing. The way that he fought what he calls the beast was incredibly brave, and we've seen that for the last 14 years. So 2013, he was diagnosed. He was given 2 years to live, and here we are in 2026. So very recently, my partner actually gifted me his book for my birthday, The Power of Choice, and there's many great quotes in it, but there's one on agency and your ability to choose your outlook on things. And he references a lot Viktor Frankl's A Man's Search for Meaning, which Viktor Frankl is a Holocaust survivor, and he speaks about the last thing people can take from you is your attitude. And Neil Danaher said, "To many, I must look like a man with no choices left. But let me tell you something, I still have a choice. Every day I choose how I show up, I choose my attitude." So I think that sort of sums it up for Neil Danaher.
And he lived it, didn't he, on the King's birthday every year, the big freeze, and what an event that came, where you think if ever there was a guy that would be or could lean into or wallow in, you know, the situation that he faced, to be able to fight for such a long period of time. And that day wasn't a sad day. You know, even as Neil's health deteriorated and he went through various different stages of being able to communicate and to getting his voice back through AI in recent years, but he had the eye reading and the tracking that happened for him before that. And each year, even his family said every single year, you know, we don't know how many more of these days we have left. They were always days that were filled with smiles, you know, filled with joy, you know, people going down into the slide and everyone was having a good time and part of something that was greater than themselves. So what a legacy that he leaves. AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben on 774 ABC Melbourne. And also shout out to our folks in Tasmania who are with us tonight as well. Great to have you with us on such a night as we pay tribute to the late Neil Danaher. 1-300-222-774, the talkback number.
I went through the book today, and another quote which stood out for me was, "Life is part chance, part circumstance, part choice. You don't get to choose everything that happens to you, but you always get to choose who you become in response." And again, we've seen that from Neil. I think just reflecting on his life today, there were three clear chapters to it. So the player, he played 82 games for Essendon. His career was ended early due to injuries. He was the youngest Essendon captain, Corbin, in 1982. He was one of four brothers, the first quartet of brothers to play a VFL game together, Terry, Neil, Chris and Anthony. Then there was clearly the coaching era, and it was actually Kevin Sheedy who, when his career ended at age 26, got him in as an assistant coach at Essendon. He then obviously went on to coach Melbourne as a senior coach, 1998 to 2007, which really culminated with that 2000 grand final. And then we've got the charitable arm of Neil Danaher, which we've seen in the last 14 years as he's fought the beast.
Incredible. Three amazing acts in public life and what he was able to do. Neil Danaher, valet, taking your tributes tonight on 1-300-222-774. The Carlton 300 gamer, the man who the coaches voted as the best player in the game back in 2011, Mark Murphy, is with us. Good evening, Murph.
Good evening, Corbin. Good evening, Ben.
Your experiences with Neil, did you come across him much in your football journey?
Not so much in my football journey. No, I didn't while I was playing, obviously against Melbourne while he was coach, but one memory that sticks out back in 2004. So I was playing the MCC Herald Sun Shield out on the MCG, and it was three quarter time, and we're playing against St Bernard's, and it was Richmond and Melbourne were playing on that game after us. So we were a curtain raiser back then in 2004, and I still remember a few players just doing a few kicks and the rest of it. Neil Danaher just lobbed up to the three quarter time huddle. All the boys quickly focused from looking at our senior coach to looking at Neil Danaher. I think just Neil Danaher standing there listening into the spiel and then wished us all the best as we ran out to our position. So that was awesome. Only really just thought about that then when you asked me prior to getting in here what any memories of Neil Danaher, and that was one that sticks out.
One man who was probably playing in the main game back then was the former Fremantle and Melbourne ruckman in Jeff White.
It's really an incredible relationship that this pair shared. So Jeff White was drafted with the first pick to Fremantle. He was coached by Neil at the Dockers, where Neil was an assistant coach. Then Neil recruited him to Melbourne, and I'm pleased to say that Jeff joins us on the line. Whitey, great to speak to you. I wish it was in better circumstances. Welcome on.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks, Corbin. Good to hear from you, Mark. Yeah, it's a summer day. I just spoke to Nita actually just recently, and I think, you know, it's as you guys just pointed out, you know, those moments, you spend moments with him as much as you can, as his family have for such a long period of time. You just don't know when it was going to take hold. And, I think everyone's in shock, but also a reflection on a wonderful human being. And Mark, when you speak of that moment of him coming into the huddle, I was just actually chuckling to myself because that was Neil. You know, he would always... And the quotes that you mentioned then, Benny, he's just a wonderful person. I mean, when I suffered my stroke in 2014, he just sent out a text. He said, "Why are you thinking of you? Health is your wealth." Mm. And I live by that, you know, on a regular basis. And the famous phrase he's always said, "It's not me, it's we," you know, and he was just such a wonderful human being and wanting to know how you were. It's not about me, it's about you. And, it's a sad day, but a reflection on a wonderful, wonderful human being.
Whitey, how do you reflect on when he got the 2000 grand final group together and told them about this diagnosis in 2013?
Yeah, I was telling you before, I found the photo. Yeah, look, it was, we had no idea. We all got, you know, all the people that he, all the players that he coached with, we got together, including the club doctor, our football secretary, Jackie, we were all together, and he would always show a video before every game, like, you know, highlights of the previous round or, you know, highlights of when we played against that side and put music to it, and boys were panting their, you know, touching their hands on the chairs and, you know, cheering along. And then at the end of that, he turned around and said, "Hey, boys, I've tell you, I've got M&D. And we had no idea what M&D was. All he just said is that, you know, I've been diagnosed with this. I've been told I've probably only got 5 years to live. We all broke down crying, you know, full support. But we had no idea what this was. And look what this is now. 13 years later, everyone's well aware of this, you know, just such a, you know, catastrophic disease that people are going through each and every day. And Neil brought that to life. And, you know, and his legacy will live on forever because of not only the player he was, the coach, but what he's been able to do in the charity, you know. So it's... yeah, it is a sad day, and it's, you know, I guess I'm just in a state of shock of the fact that, you know, he's passed.
Whitey, we heard Russell Robertson on earlier today, and we all think of the very quiet and kind Neil, and he was certainly all of those things. But Russell told a few stories about maybe a different side of him when he was berating, baking the Melbourne group of the late 90s, early 2000s, to try and be the best that they could be. How do you remember that?
Yeah, he definitely had that side of him. I remember one year we were playing the Cats down at Kardinia Park, and the Wiz, Jeff Farmer, hadn't had a touch to half time. Neil came in, slammed his hand against the whiteboard and said, "Get that effing those boots off your feet right now and go into black boots." I think he had these really flashy boots. So yeah, he had that side of him that, and I think as us past players really appreciate, really are in awe of, I guess, the way the public's reacted to him, is that that's what we saw as a coach. We saw it in the four walls. We saw what the banner he had, the time we could switch on, the time we could have a banner. But since doing the charity stuff for M&D, everyone's then now seen Neil of who he is. And I think that's been an amazing thing that, you know, been able to, you know, really capture what he was. And, you know, even like he came to the Gold, he always come to the Gold Coast, always give me a call. And this is a time when he was, he could sort of talk, but his best translator was his wife, Jan, who is such a wonderful human being. And I send my love to Jan and Loz and Beck and Luke and Ben, you know, his immediate family. And so I sat down and Neil's right there. We're in a hotel in Gold Coast, and he said something. And I said to Jan, "What was that? What did he say?" And she said, "Do you really want to know?" And I said, "Yeah." And she basically said, in Neil's words, "Geez, you put on a lot of weight now, Whitey." And so, you know, that was Neil. You know, even when he was, you know, he was, his mind was still ticking, but he just couldn't get the actions out. Yeah. And, you know, he was just a wonderful, wonderful person.
Whitey, beautiful tribute. Appreciate your time, as always. Thanks for jumping on, particularly under the circumstances.
No worries. Thanks, guys. Thanks,
Jeff Whitey. Watt, the champion Melbourne and Fremantle ruckman, who, of course, played under the late Neil Danaher, who sadly passed away today, aged 65 after a near 14-year battle with motor neuron disease. This is AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben, the Carlton champion Mark Murphy in the house. Your calls on 1300 222 774. You're on ABC Radio across Victoria and Tasmania. To another man who played footy at league level, but he's got a completely different connection to the Danaher family. His name is Adam Tomlinson. He's done some work for us in the past here as part of the ABC family. Former GWS and Melbourne footballer, but family friend of the Danahers. And I'm pleased to say Adam joins us on the line. Adam, sorry for your loss and appreciate your time.
Corbin, Ben, Mark, no, I appreciate that, guys. It's you know, it's been a sad day, but also a day where we've, you know, I've got the TV on in the background and reflecting on where this all started and seeing the footage of Neil and his brothers running out and playing that one game together and, you know, celebrating these little moments that Neil's ticked off along the way. And but no, you're spot on, so I appreciate that. But it has been a sad day for the family, and you know, our heart does go out to the whole Danaher family. And you know, I'm not just talking about Jan, Luke, Loz, Beck and Ben. I mean, the Danaher spread from sort of here all the way up to the top of New South Wales. So no, I do send my love to all of them.
So Adam, as a young lad growing up in the world in Victoria, who was Neil Danaher to you?
Yeah, so my mum is best friends with Jan, and so growing up, I've got two older sisters, and both my sisters played a lot of netball with Loz and Beck, and then Ben was my age, and I'll never forget this. Neil and Jan were late to put his papers in at the Kew Rovers, and so he actually had to come and play footy at the Canterbury Cobras for a season in tackers. And that was sort of my first interaction. Mum's like, now, one of my friends' sons is coming down to footy tonight, so you make sure that you're nice to him. And that was Ben. And I'll never forget it. You know, whenever Ben had the ball, he had the eyes for each other, and we'd only kick to each other because we were a year younger than everyone else. And, that was how my relationship with the Danaher family kicked off. And, you know, a lot of the time after footy games, I was at, you know, the coach of Melbourne's house. Mm. And, you know, back then I just thought that was a normal thing. And then as you grow older and then as you start playing, Mark, you'd know this, you'd avoid the coach's house at all times.
My word, you would.
So, it's that was my introduction to the Danaher family. And, you know, I'm so, you know, lucky to have that insight to what a super family it is. But, yeah, that's how it all kicked off.
So you're at a barbecue with your family at the Danahers, or you're over at their house and Neil is around. Like, what do you remember of him when you're a young kid running around with Ben at the Danahers?
It's funny because before everything, you know, kicked off, I vividly remember being 9 years of age, and Neil, must have been a Sunday because we played early in the morning, and then Neil was off to actually go and coach, and he had his full D's kit on, and, you know, there was an aura about him. And, you know, it's a perfect combination of friendly and fierce in this person who would sort of walk around. And, you know, as I said, as I've grown, you realise, you know, what a coach has got to deal with on game day. And to have 2 9-year-olds running around kicking footies in the hallway is probably not what you really want. But, you know, I vividly remember that. And, you know, luckily I got drafted, and the second game of football we played was the second game of league footy I played was at Blacktown against West Coast, and Neil was part of the West Coast operations. He was part of the footy department, and, you know, he came out onto the field. We have a conversation, and so I think the beauty of footy was just these opportunities you get to connect with, you know, people who you've known from, you know, Dave Dalton to whenever, and then even to when I did my knee in 2021. I ran into Neil, and I can't remember where it was, but he said two things to me, and he goes, it could be worse. You could do 3 knees. And then I ran into him again a year later, and he goes, well, it could be worse. You could miss out on 2 flags. And, you know, it's just a constant reminder that, you know, life could always be worse, no matter, you know, any situation you're in. And something I always reflect on, and I actually say this to my wife, and she gets pretty pissed off, and even my sister, and I say, you know, and Neil said this, I would have been in a speech or any, and he's had a lot of quotes along the time, but, you know, if you don't like it, change it. And if you can't change it, change the way you think about it. And I've honestly lived by that every day. And, you know, you have, whether it's a minuscule situation or a big picture or a challenge in life, it's what I've sort of tried to do and not get caught up on, you know, what can really bring you down. Because I think that's one thing I've taken out of what Neil's been able to teach to so many people is, you know, there is a way to tackle things, and it might not always be doom and gloom.
And last one, Adam, you go on to play in the famed Big Freeze game. So you're now representing Melbourne after starting with the Giants, and obviously you come across Neil again. What was that experience like being out there on the field on a day that he's really built around this man who's become an icon in Australian life, and someone, again, who you first had interactions with as a very young lad? What was it like being on that side of it and as a player in such a game?
Yeah, it's really interesting. You're so lucky to be able to play for Melbourne or Collingwood on this day. And I think Neil didn't want to make that day about him, but I also felt there was an opportunity where we got to acknowledge Neil for what he'd done and who he was as a person. And standing on the ground and you look to the MCC or the Shane Warne stand as it is now, and you see everyone with a beanie on, and it's almost to the point, if you're not wearing a beanie, it's almost an insult to Neil, who's on the field. And I think that was the beauty of it, but to, you know, actually give him a moment to appreciate everything he's done. It's, you know, and as I said, he didn't want it to be about him, but I think we and he deserves to have a moment where this is about him and everything that he's done, and not just for MND, but for every person that he's come in contact with, and, you know, give them a change of thought or a change of way they approach things, because he is a really superhuman person.
Adam, wonderful tribute. I appreciate you jumping on and having a chat with us tonight, and sorry for your loss.
Nah, thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. And as I said before, I send my love to all the Danahers and everyone out there, because it is a sad but also a great time to celebrate, you know, a truly hero of our generation.
Adam Tomlinson, former GWS and Melbourne footballer and family friend of the Danahers. Speaking of friends of Neil, this is AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben, the Carlton champion Mark Murphy in the house, and a friend of ours, Ian Cohen, joins us on the program. He's worked with Neil and known him for many years, and in more recent years, part of the Fight MND campaign. Kozer, I wish it was under better circumstances, but sorry for your loss, and I appreciate you jumping on with us.
Yeah, thanks, Corby. Appreciate that. And to be fair, it's a privilege to be able to talk about the great man.
So when someone says to you in the years to come, who was Neil Danaher, what do you tell them, Kozer?
Well, I tell you, even towards the end, his cheeky smile and his ability to talk to me through his eyes was unmatched. He was quite an inspirational leader. He was a man that obviously could talk to all walks of life. We know him as a motivational speaker. He's called the Reverend. He was actually pretty quiet early on in his playing days. And look, I got to know him obviously as my role as a sports journo. And as you people all know, there's some people you get close to in the industry. There's some people that it's, you know, just more of a business. And Neil and I were close. And then obviously when he was diagnosed, and then, yeah, 18 months, 2 years into that, he then said, Coz, what can we do? How can we do it? So I've been on board, obviously, with Fight MND for a long period, and been privileged to be a part of the journey that's just been enormous. And, you know, he could have sat back and said, well, I'll tick off the bucket list. And he said, nah, bugger that. He's had Mr. Negative and Mr. Positive sitting on his shoulders, and he listened to Mr. Positive a lot more than he listened to Mr. Negative.
Oh, I've just read about that in the book recently, Kozer, and it's a great phrase. How did you monitor his attitude and his ability to listen to Mr. Positive and not Mr. Negative on the shoulder as he declined?
Look, certainly it got more challenging because his general wit and repartee, you know, it became a process of the eye gaze machine and those sort of things as well. So he still wanted to communicate, and he was still really scything in the way he communicated. You know, everyone knew exactly where they stood with Neil. But in terms of monitoring how he was going, it's one of those diseases, Ben, and it's really sad, but the finish line is undefeated at the moment, and we're working really hard to try and get some clever person in a white jacket with a machine that goes ping to be able to work out, you know, exactly what causes this insidious disease. So, you know, he was always up for the challenge. He lived his life very publicly. You know, that's an amazing thing to do, to publicly accept the fact that people are going to watch your, you know, situation decline. And when you think about that, that's incredibly generous and brave, you know, all those words that you'd use to describe him.
Ian Cohen with us, a friend of ours here on the ABC and worked with Neil Danaher as part of the Fight MND campaign. And the fight will continue this year on King's birthday and what's going to be an emotional day at the MCG. We appreciate Ian's time. What's a memory you'll take with you from Neil Danaher and his incredible three acts in public life as a player, as a coach, and then obviously most recently as a campaigner for motor neuron disease?
I also liked Adam's line about him being the perfect combination of friendly and fierce. When he remembered him as a 9-year-old in his full Melbourne kit about to leave and go and coach the Demons. So he was great, Adam Tomlinson. And I think my main reflection from reading the book and hearing Neil is the ability to choose your attitude.
From Dan off the SMS line, I always recall a cheeky response from Neil to an earnest journalist at a press conference. The journalist, eager for information on the fitness of David Neitz, suggested he was only 80% fit. Neil paused, as in deep thought, on response, slightly tongue-in-cheek, that he took the thought that he was 78% fit. That was Neil's response. So just to disagree with the journalist a little bit.
Yeah. I'm not sure you quite nailed the delivery there, Corbin. No. I think it was that Neil replied that he thought that Nita was 78% fit.
But, did we not get that?
Yeah, but it was a bit of a stumble and bumble to get there in the end.
He got there somehow in the end, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
It wasn't comprehensive. Took the semi crude.
Who needs enemies when you got friends like these? That's 1-300-222-774.
What you did say beautifully is that the footy conversation is a little bit in the shade today, Corbin, but it was a pretty catastrophic weekend in terms of the injuries, wasn't it, out of the round just completed?
Certainly was. I felt like that was a real theme across the seven games. It may be because of the high-profile guys that were involved, but when you think about Jamie Elliott, which really took some of the gloss off what was just a magical day at the MCG for the Collingwood Football Club, as Scott Pendlebury went through the record. Darcy Moore went down in the same game. Tom Lynch ended up hospitalised with a larynx injury out of Friday night, which was a brutal game. Seven guys injured, three of them ended up in hospital. Andy McGrath was one of those, the captain of Essendon, yeah, with a shattered jaw. And then Isaac Rankin, going back to the game that you did, Murph, on Thursday night. And that says nothing about an ACL injury to young Matt Carroll, who'd been playing some good footy. Whitfield out before the bounce. Buckley within the opening minutes for GWS. We had Kel Archie broke his hand on the run. Jake Lever got concussed yesterday. So it was a savage round 11 on the injury front.
It's a brutal reminder just how tough this game is. And people think, oh, well, it's not as hard as what it used to be. It's physically opened up a lot more. And if you're a good runner, you can get away with anything. It's still a brutal game when you come back to it. Some of the hits and just the way in which you expect to use your body this day and age. And for as long as football's ever been played, it's a bloody tough game.
Did you mention Sammy Durham there as well? I think you might have, but that knee to the head, I mean, that's brutal. I look at you, Murph. I mean, you're not a big man. You played as an inside mid for 300 games, and we speak about playing golf, and you say, look, I'd love to play golf.
Could get on the outside.
Yeah, could get on the outside. But
I could get 40 in this day and age. No joking.
You played as a midfielder for your career. You say, look, I'd love to play golf, but my shoulders just won't allow it. So that is physically how you've come out of the game.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's everyone's got ailments when they get older, but I've got the issues with the shoulder. I tried to give my hand a bit of tennis too recently, and there was a sore reminder that my knee isn't too handy either. So keeping things in a straight line, but you're right. Like everyone's got their limitations, and mine's my shoulder. So unfortunately, I like to hit the golf ball with you, Benny, yeah, but can't do it.
Oh, I did see a video of you playing tennis too, and I noticed the shirt was off while you were having a hit.
We'll move on.
Shout out to Tasmania, who's with us tonight as well. Nice to have you down in the Apple Isle. If you want to have your say, the talkback number 1-300-222-774. AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben, the Carlton champion, Mark Murphy. This is ABC Radio across Victoria and Tasmania.
We're happy to talk about your winners and losers out of the weekend as well, which is something we always do. Everything feels a little... it feels hard tonight to laugh and be joyful and talk about the footy like it's incredibly meaningful, like we so often do. But your winners and losers out of the weekend, Corbin, I know you were big on Collingwood and the way they handled the Scott Pendlebury milestone.
It was a magical day at the footy, and I was a little upset that by the time we got there, it felt like there was a lot of people in the footy community basically saying, oh, finally, it's out of the way, and how the game had been commercialised and sold to us for so many weeks out. But it was a significant moment historically, and I'm someone that, you know, loves the history of the game. It's only the fourth time in the last 46 years that someone went through the game's record, and as many of us grew up, Murph, you know, they talked about Michael Tuck's record like this fabled thing that no one would ever get to, and he held it for 26 years before Brent Harvey was able to do it, and we've had to wait another 10 years. So really, in the space of 36 years, it's been broken twice, which is incredible. And for everything that was said in the lead-up and, you know, all the shots that were taken, it was just an awesome day at the footy. It felt different, and I've been lucky enough to work some big games now for the ABC. And, you know, the grand final day has a different vibe to it again, the same way that Anzac Day feels different and first game of a final or anything else. And it felt like a finals-type game when you arrived and there were people there 2.5 hours early trying to get into the general admission section where there were no reserved seats to rush into the MCC members, or there was a similar section at the top of the Shane Warne stand at the punt road end. So those sections of the ground were filled, and we're talking like 2.5 hours before the game started, and you knew it was a big time event. The way that they involved the other members of the 400 club, so it wasn't just a Collingwood thing; it was a whole of league thing to be able to have those guys so front and center. Brent Harvey tossed the coin. And then all his teammates as well. So it was a special day for everybody that took part in it, people that went along as spectators. It wasn't just a special day for Scott. And I actually feel for people that were turned off by it because you missed it. Like, it was this great event in the history of the game that might never happen again. Mm. And by getting grumpy and bent out of shape about it, essentially, you know, people missed this great event that we all got to be part of for people that experienced it the way we did on Saturday.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I mean, people get bitter for whatever reason. I don't understand it. But, yeah, celebrate a terrific sports person achieving something terrific. It seemed like all of Melbourne was excited to watch it. So whether you could get to the ground or not, there was the pubs were full of people there watching and all gathering together and watching a bit of other sports going on as well at the same time, but then getting in there and watching, the North Melbourne game being the way that was leading into the big game, the MCG, celebrating Scott Penderbury. And I thought that the way in which Collingwood did it in the end was fantastic. I love the gold numbers that everyone wore at the same time. I didn't expect that to occur, and I thought that was a nice surprise. And the one thing it took out of me, I took out of it, was when Scott Penderbury talked post-game about, well, he's proud of the fact that that didn't get out and no one knew about that. So many clubs can't get that stuff in-house, can they?
No.
So for that to remain in-house, not get out, no one knew about it, is a really sign of a great football club.
And he wore some big hits for it along the way. People saying, oh, he's going to wear a different number than the rest of his teammates.
I reckon that's why they changed it late.
Oh, that's such a cynical thing to say.
Yeah. You don't think it really is. But I loved it. I was happy with all of it. But I think the original plan was Pendles wears it, and then I think they copped a few hits and they changed it.
Jeez, you're one of those guys. 1-300-222-774, the talkback number. 1-300-222-774, AFL Monday on 774 ABC Melbourne across the state of Victoria and down in Taz tonight as well. 1-300-222-774.
I've got a big winner for you, Geelong. So, Murph, a couple of weeks ago you wrote them off. They've beaten Brisbane.
Come on.
And then they've beaten Sydney. The Brisbane win might not look quite as good after their efforts against GWS on the weekend, but I just ran through this, Corbin. Since the start of 2007, which is what I would say is the start of this great Geelong run that they've been on, where they virtually contend every year, they are 15-3 when playing a team top two on the ladder down at Cadinia Park. So quite incredible. 18 times they've played a team coming into the weekend that are top two on the ladder on their home dung heap, and they've won 15 of them.
You got a winner for us, Murph?
North Melbourne Football Club. Yeah. I love that. I was probably 2 or 3 weeks ago, wasn't it, when they played the Swans at Docklands, and you thought, was that the game that they let slip that didn't quite get them on this trajectory of playing finals in 2026 and finally see North Melbourne feature again? And who knows whether this is going to be the start of that upward track for this football club. But I thought the way in which that last 5 minutes especially played out, Wardlaw's just vision and ability to lower the eyes through the middle of the ground, the corridor, which then opened up that last passage of play. It was special to watch a young team go about it and almost stand up when others probably, well, previously they haven't done it as a collective, but I thought they did that on the weekend. And where I was watching the game, it was lots of North Melbourne supporters, and there was a real bounce in the air. And I think everyone's enjoying I think everyone enjoys seeing a team that's been down for such a long period of time have a great win like that.
Oh, I've got a winner as well, which is the game broadly. And I don't mean that game individually. I mean the state of the game at the moment. Ninth time this year, Corbin, that both teams have booted 100 points. So we had five in the entirety of last year. So lots of high scoring. I think you've spoken about the fact that there's a little bit of Stockholm syndrome, perhaps, with people about contested footy and how much they love that. But I think the game's tracking pretty well with some of the new rules.
Let's see how I go with this one, Ben. Even though I don't follow the AFL, I think the tremendous stoicism of Neil Danaher, of Neil, in my fight with Parkinson's and prostate cancer at this time. Rest in peace. All the best to you as well on your continued battle on that front. It's nice to hear from you tonight. And from Jacinta?
Neil Danaher and family have made MND a part of our everyday vernacular. He was a wonderful player to watch. His intelligence and passion for football and inspiration of rare quality as a teammate and a coach. Like Teddy Whitten, who too gave great awareness for prostate cancer. Both legends. And I miss my dad, who passed 2 years ago.
You can share your memories of Neil Danaher on 1300 222 774. That's 1300 222 774. The Prime Minister Anthony Albanese spoke earlier today about the sad passing of the Australian of the Year for 2025, Neil Danaher.
It was a profound honour for me to present Neil Danaher the Australian of the Year award in 2025. I think it is safe to say that there has never been an award so unanimously agreed to by every single Australian on that night. Richly deserved recognition, of course, that Neil embraced not as an accolade, but as a platform, a way to continue his advocacy for a cure. Neil Danaher's remarkable legacy lives all around us. The difference he made can be measured in the national awareness and the tens of millions of dollars that he and Fight MND have raised to research a cure. It can be counted in the tens of thousands of Big Freeze beanies that will fill the MCG on the King's Birthday weekend.
He was a great teammate, Neil Danaher, and right to the end, as you talk about, you know, good teammates being somebody that's willing to share the spotlight and put other people front and centre. And Big Freeze was the epitome of that, wasn't it? It was a day about Neil Danaher, but it was about putting other guys, other people in the industry, essentially, some from other industries, essentially putting them on the slide and giving them their moment, essentially, to make the icy plunge, all basically in the support of a greater cause. So, what an amazing legacy that he leaves.
One of my favourite anecdotes was around, I think Neil wanted to go with bandanas. That was his original fundraising plan. And I think it was either his wife, Jan, or his daughter, Beck, who said, maybe we should go with beanies. I think it was Beck.
I think it was.
Yep.
Yep.
And what an idea that has proven to be. This text is anonymous, but it says, how about those Geelong Cats? Also, Foxtel cutting off the North Melbourne song to show us Pendles walking around the locker room is absolutely atrocious. Atrocious.
Atrocious?
Shame. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm picking you up on everything tonight.
I'm feeling the pressure.
It's gone head-to-head, you
like,
two.
I'm feeling the heat. Protect
yourself at all times.
I might not read anymore. I've got a few questions for you, Murph, as well.
Just on that, we did that too, by the way, on the ABC.
Yep.
So I understand. Self-report. I understand North Melbourne people are probably feeling a little salty that we got out of there early before taking the song, but it's a once in a...
How long did you stay with the game before you flicked it?
About 10 minutes. We actually extended it longer.
Okay. We got to the end. But essentially, you're about to have a record that's been broken for the second time in 36 years. We plugged the song in at halftime, which I'm sure Fox Footy would have done the same thing as well. But there's a reason why you break away in those kind of moments. I get that it might make North Melbourne fans a little unhappy, but given the day that it was, I can understand how that happens.
I've got some questions for you, Murph. Have you been contacted by anyone at Carlton about joining a coaching search panel yet?
No, I haven't, no.
I really thought the answer to that question would be yes.
No.
Have you heard anything about who might be on the panel?
No, I've got no idea. No, I haven't spoken to anyone from the footy club.
Right. Is that legit?
Yeah. I'm just still enjoying myself from the weekend after Birdman salute. I thought that's where you were going to go from your next question, Benny. I was a bit surprised.
When I said to you winners earlier, I thought that's where exactly where you were going to go with your Group 1 winning horse.
No, well, that's why I thought you might have cut the ABC coverage to then go straight to Doomben and just capture the Birdman win.
Were you up there for it?
No, I just stayed here and watched it. Well, former teammates are still playing. They were playing later that night in Adelaide, so there was no one else really to go watch the horse with.
Who's in on the horse with you that we would know?
Chris Judd, you'd probably know him.
Yep, he's a good player.
Johnny Barker was a great man.
He was the caretaker.
Caretaker coach. He didn't get the job, ultimately. Yep. And then there's guys like Paddy Cripps, Sam Walsh, Jacob Wiedering, Will Setterfield, Zach Fisher, Mick Gibbons. A few old boys.
Mickey Gibbons, premiership player with Yarrawonga.
Yes, yep. Dual Liston medal winner.
Yeah, awesome. Oh, well, congratulations on Birdman.
Yeah, so that's the first Group 1 win. And we'll get ready for this big spring.
Beautiful.
So put it out to the pasture for a bit and we'll see you getting ready for Cox Plate, Caulfield Cup, Melbourne Cup, Triple.
I look forward to seeing you out there, Murphy. See where you can sneak us into the owner's room at some
get some lanyards, terrific.
It'll be a beautiful time in the spring.
Just on one of the owners, Paddy Cripps too.
Yeah.
Did he show that he's got a fair bit more juice left in the tank on the weekend?
Yeah, well, I know what it's like in football. People write it; they write off champions very early, don't they? When they show a little bit of a form slump or not quite up to that level that we're used to seeing from him. But yeah, he's been incredible the last couple of weeks, hasn't he? He still played some great games to start the season, and I think he was a number one clearance player still in the comp in the first 10 or so games. So it wasn't like he wasn't digging in. Like, he was still having a crack. Just probably wasn't that level that we're used to seeing. And when you set such a high bar throughout your career, you're always going to grab the attention of the naysayers. But he's been unbelievable the last 2 weeks. Looks a bit freer in the way in which he's going about it. Pressure's out of the joint. So I think they're just playing a bit more freer football, back to basics and enjoying the last couple of weeks.
Can Josh Fraser win the job?
It's going to be interesting to see what happens over the next 10 weeks. So, depending how they go, but if he feels that he's ready, because I know he's saying at the moment he's not ready to be a senior coach, but who knows what the next 2.5 months look like for him. If he wants to put his hand up and go in the process and go through that opportunity to be the next Carlton coach or coach somewhere else, why wouldn't you put your hand up and do it? But I think he's going to stick with the hard and fast line at the moment about, no, I'm not quite ready and just enjoying my time and getting opportunity.
Two and a half
games out of a wild card spot, the Blues?
That's crazy, isn't it, when you look at it like that. How many coaches did you have over the journey, Murph?
I think I had six.
Yeah.
All up.
So, like, we're looking at Brad Scott at the moment, and, like, when you're in a dressing room, is there a point when you know that the coach is cooked?
You certainly understand. You feel that there's away. I think that there was a few times in my career where I just could sense it was going to occur.
Yeah,
and we were sort of one bad loss from it happening.
Yeah. So do you feel like that's happening at Essendon at the moment? Like, would they be feeling that internally, or they'd at least be thinking like this could happen any given moment?
It's a hard one. I mean, they've been decimated with injuries. And on the weekend, yes, they lost to Richmond, who have been decimated themselves, but that was a catastrophic game that they encountered on the weekend. It's a hard one to read into from the weekend. I was thinking before that game on the weekend, if they were to lose that, it'd been a bit of strife, but I think the way in which the game played out, it was almost like, hands are tied a bit on the weekend. I know it's all not down to one game, but if they were at their fullest strength and had no injuries on the night, I think it would be pretty hard reading today.
There's a whole there's a whole lot of noise they've got to try and keep out yet with games against West Coast and Carlton to come. But if they get to the end of the year in one piece, they get the number one pick. The year after that, they're going to get Kobe Buick, who's arguably the best kid in the draft because he's father-son. All of a sudden, you put two elite kids into this group with what they've already got, with Caddy and Kakko and Roby and everything else.
Will they keep Caddy, though?
And you get another first-round pick. You get another first-round pick for Zach Merritt. All of a sudden, you're like, gee, this isn't looking so bad. That all of a sudden you've at least gone back to ground zero and got the nucleus of your team for the next decade. Mm. Compare that to the position, say, St Kilda's in, for example, where that they've tried to top up on the run. I know there's a lot to happen yet, and they're probably, the thing that Brad's going to have to answer for is that they're 1-10. So yeah. I don't think anyone thinks they're the 18th best list in the competition. Maybe some people do. But I think they say they were two or three wins at this particular stage of the season. I think it's a whole lot different.
I think they're young players. They've got some really top-end talent. So I think they would be looking at those guys and thinking, well, these are the guys who are going to be our core players for the next 10 or 12 years and really surround them with some good mature bodies to try and lead them as quick as they possibly can. But that's the next question as well. Who the leaders that they've got at the moment, are they the ones that you want them there to try and carry them forward? So there's a lot of question marks, unfortunately, are probably around that. And I think you don't just look at it as a 1-10 season. You sort of look at it over the last 18 months. They've been a long way off it.
What they need someone like Luke Parker at North Melbourne. Like they need someone like that for a couple of years at the back end that can set some standards and show them the way. And I don't know, there's been a lot of talk about, oh, they should have got rid of Zach Merritt last year. And that, yeah, history sort of shows that. Well, if we want to prove the counterfactual, what about if Zach Merritt, instead of requesting a trade and it all playing out in the media, what if he went away, put his head down over summer, came back, did a full preseason, showed all the kids the way to go about it and play AFL footy? What would that have looked like? You can't prove that either. So it's impossible to prove the counterfactual.
It's a hard one for Zach because the player that I know, that he's an ultimate professional. So, like, he probably can't have done much more than what he's done over the years. And I think personally he'd be just obviously looking for opportunities of tasting some success. And he probably thinks that that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Does anyone think he's going to be there next year?
I don't think so.
No. Couple off the SMS, Ben. You go.
You're all giving each other a good nudge tonight. What do we think about the Eagles? How many games can they win on their form against Collingwood? That's from Adrian in Clifton Hill.
The one thing about the Eagles, I was impressed on a big stage, big crowd, to run them really close on a really important day for the Collingwood Football Club. So that experience playing in front of that crowd and the build-up would have been great for those young guys to experience that and be in a finals-like environment.
You weren't there and wearing a West Coast Eagles scarf. You often do that in big games between West Coast and Collingwood at the MCG.
Not bad, tonight. But no, look, I wasn't there. I was just too busy watching the Birdman salute, mate.
Grant from Sydney. Corbin, Ben and Murph, respectfully, the ABC's Rugby League team, also paying tribute to Neil Danaher's passing tonight. So across the sports and nationwide, appreciate that, Grant. And appreciate all your contributions throughout the show as well here on AFL Monday. Corbin and Ben and the Carlton champion, Mark Murphy. Thanks to Anthony Furchie on the socials. Thanks to Jules Hay for her efforts in the producer's booth. And we got MJ with us tonight as well, which is... You know, it's a big night when MJ joins us in the booth. So that was AFL Monday. You can listen live through 774 ABC Melbourne, streamed through ABC Listen, and you can contribute to the program from 6:30 Eastern Time every Monday on 1300 222 774. That's 1300 222 774. Appreciate your company tonight. Don't forget to tell your friends about it and even the people you don't like. This is ABC AFL Daily. Hope you can join me tomorrow. I'll be joined by Bob Murphy to pull apart all the agenda-setting shows in the footy landscape. We'll be right back.